Welcome back to Nostalgia. Dave here with my top 10 TV shows of 2023. Gonna recap my favorite shows of the year, the best shows of 2023. Of course, I already did this for music, my top 10 albums, top 10 songs out now. Check that out if you missed it. And of course, I'll be doing my top 10 movies coming soon. So again, make sure you subscribe, youtube.com/nostalgiapod, so you don't miss all those lists, all that year-end goodness. But yeah, 2023 TV, I would say this was a step back from 2022. 2022, I just think, had stronger high-end shows overall, just more of them. And 2024, I feel like, will probably be a step back in that direction as well. It's looking pretty stacked. We got some heavy hitters returning as well. Nonetheless, I still like my list for 2023, particularly at the top. So I'm going to go through my list 10 to 1 and then do some honorable mentions at the end and also talk about my most disappointing series of the year as well. And I've reviewed all 10 of these shows already on the pod. So if you missed those reviews or you want longer discussion, make sure you check those out. But in the interest of going through 10 plus shows, I'll be somewhat brief about all of these. But yeah, let's get into it. And of course, leave a comment. Let me know what you think of the list. Let me know what your favorite shows are. What's something I missed? What's something I underranked or ignored? Let me know. And yeah, let's get into it. All right, so number 10 for me is Gen V, season 1 on Amazon Prime Video. Gen V, of course, is this spinoff series, the first live-action spinoff of The Boys. And much like The Boys, Gen V continues the, I think, really awesome world-building that we've got from this franchise thus far and really delivers that, I think, meta-observation of current events. A really, I think, clever point of view, both for its humor and for its darkness that we associate with The Boys. Gen V really kept that going, but had this, I think, really awesome core conceit, which was The Boys, but at college and Godolkin University, God U, even though it was predictably a front for more nefarious means, was just kind of perfect to have a bunch of young soups be together so they can fucking kill each other. My only gripe with the series is that I wish we spent more time doing the college stuff before we kind of got whisked off into the latest plot to take down Vought, you know? Nonetheless, I think it was a really effective spinoff. I've really enjoyed the entire cast, the entire ensemble. I think it's done really well, and I'm really much looking forward to the second season. Really looking forward to how it ties in to The Boys as well. You know, obviously we had the Homelander cameo appearance at the very end in the finale. Yeah, I mean, I had a lot more to say in my review, but overall, I think Gen V was really kind of exceeded my expectations for what the spinoff was, and I honestly thought it was really great in its own right. So yeah, Gen V for me, number 10. Number 9 for me is Hijack on Apple TV Plus, starring Idris Elba. This is definitely the show I had the least, you know, awareness of going in. All the other shows on my list, I either had watched previous seasons or knew about coming in. Hijack was a complete surprise, and I think a surprise hit for Apple in the summer as well. And again, a really novel, tight premise for Hijack, which is Idris Elba is on a plane that gets hijacked. And it's really thrilling, unsurprisingly. You know, I think this is a series that through 7 episodes, it kind of subverts audience expectations at times. It's not too predictable. There's some fun twists and turns to it. It's definitely more fun to be up in the plane than with some of the subplots down on land. But overall, I thought the how the tension, how the conflict changed and progressed throughout the course of the series really made it thrilling and entertaining the entire time. And Idris has just a lot of screen presence. He is, I think, really capable at that, as we all know. And he really holds the screen in Hijack. And yeah, there's not much more to say than that. It's just, I think, a really tight, thrilling series. And whether this show comes back for a season 2, I'm not sure. It's perfectly self-contained as it is. But honestly, I'd be open to it. Maybe with a different situation, maybe a different star, who's to say. But yeah, shout out Hijack. Definitely my biggest surprise of the year. Number 8 for me is Sex Education Season 4 on Netflix, the 4th and final season. I mean, this was a series that, of course, back when it premiered, really came out of nowhere and was a big surprise. But obviously now, at the end with Season 4, this is a show with a really loyal fan base. It's there's been a lot of breakout performers on this series. We're going to be seeing a lot of these people for a long time. thinking of people like Emma Mackey, of course, Connor Swindells as well. Nukti Gatwa is the new Doctor Who right now, after all, you know? It's quite the prolific cast. And yeah, I think season four was a really fitting send-off for this. It was a series that definitely needed to end, given how hot this cast has become. But this is also something that really subverted expectations in terms of how the Maeve Otis relationship gets resolved at the end of this series. That definitely doesn't take the easy way out, you know, and I really enjoyed that. There are certain characters that definitely had better moments on past seasons, and if anything's issue with Sex Education, it's just that the ensemble continued to grow and grow, so not everyone gets all the time they deserve, and some narrative threads are just more impactful than others. But overall, this is a show that I think really lands the plane nicely with season four. It always had a lot of heart, a lot of kindness for the type of topics it tackled, and ultimately just had a really tremendous ensemble that you liked to spend time with. And these are characters that we went on a long journey with, you know, and kind of be sad that the show's gone. But of course, I'm really looking forward to seeing this cast do other stuff moving forward. So yeah, shout out Sex Education. This was a really fun time, and I think probably the second best season of the series overall, I would say. So yeah, that's number eight. Number seven for me is What We Do in the Shadows Season 5, which we now know is the penultimate season of the FX comedy series, FX on Hulu. And this is a series that has just been consistently excellent through its entire run, and that it did not change with Season 5. And it's just really simple pleasures, man. This is a knockout, hilarious show. You know, I think minute per minute, like, just the most laughs you can possibly find on TV. It is still so funny. The central premise of these, you know, centuries-old vampires living in modern-day Staten Island and not knowing how human society functions continues to be a goldmine for laughs. And yet now we spend so much time with all these characters that as things begin to change slowly, you know, such as Guillermo, the vampire familiar, becoming a vampire slowly but surely, you kind of really long for the ride. You know, to me, I think the highlight of this season was the local news episode, which is just one of the funniest things I've ever seen. Con Robinson character continues to be just an amazing creation. Matthew Berry's performance, obviously impeccable. The whole ensemble is great. And yeah, I mean, it just really makes me laugh. It's really just not too more complicated than that. It's just an absolute knockout, great time all the time. Number six for me is The Righteous Gemstones on HBO Season 3. Similar appeal to What We Do in the Shadows, but I have Gemstones just a little bit higher because Gemstones is a bit more serialized, a bit less procedural in how it goes about its narrative. But very similar appeal in the sense that Righteous Gemstones just makes me laugh all the damn time. It has such a committed cast, and it's probably the best HBO comedy since Veep at this point. I think that's kind of undeniable. And this is a show that really finds a nice way to slightly reinvent the wheel with each season. You know, the David Gordon Green, Jodie Hill, Danny McBride creative force behind this series, they really know what they're doing at this point. So they can bring in guest stars, they can bring in big actors for small cameo type, small roles. And it makes a nice impact. So when they change stuff up just a little bit this season, the example of that, of course, is having Eli Gemstone, John Goodman's character, have like a sister with another family, have them kind of be brought back in the fold. It's like just enough to like spend more time with these characters. And you get a lot of nice payoff, I think, with this series, like Adam Devine's character and Keith coming out at the end of the season. Edie Patterson, again, continues to be the MVP of the series. Just so, so funny all the damn time. But she has quite the arc as well in terms of her infidelity with her marriage. And Tim Baltz playing her husband, really probably his best season thus far, you know. And Danny McBride, very, very capable, very steady as like this, you know, ostensible lead of the show. And Walton Goggins as Baby Billy, it's a less is more approach with how they use him, but that character also just so goddamn funny. Baby Billy's Bible Bonkers, the biblical Family Feud ripoff, hilarious conceit, you know, really good flashback episode once again, as they do on this show. I'm really excited for this show to be back with season four, much like Shadows. It's just so reliably what it is, and it's not really too complicated. It's just really great. So number five for me is Barry on HBO, and I think this is where the list starts to take kind of a step up. You know, when I said that 2023 wasn't as strong as 2022, I think it was partially because you kind of have like a lot of like modular choices you can do at the back half of a list with 2022, whereas the top half is really undeniable. Where at, for 2023, I mean, for 2022, though, there was just so many heaters that you had to fit in. The list was so stacked. So I think that's kind of where we're picking up with the list now, where it starts to get really stacked and really undeniable. And that was starting off number five for me, Barry, season four on HBO, the fourth and final season. And this is another series that I think ends really capably. It's really deftly done. And this is a show that I think it's partially on my list just because of my appreciation and admiration for what this series of Barry started as, progressed to, and became, and ended as. You know, this is a show that started out, it was a pretty easy to understand and wrap your head around dark comedy, you know, as the hitman who's trying to go to acting school and change his life, but still kind of being an active hitman. And where this show got to, where it basically left its comedy trappings almost completely behind, despite still having funny moments, and got quite metaphysical at times. The filmmaking craft really took a step up. But really, the character development on this series with Barry, with Sally, with Fuchs, with Gene, with NoHo Hank, who was a character that was supposed to be killed in the first season, but Anthony Carrigan's standout performance kept him alive so far that he became one of the best aspects of the entire series. Like, you went on such a journey with all of these characters. I think it just speaks to the writing, speaks to the vision behind the show, and the humor as it progressed. Now there was just some, I think, really dark comedic elements to this, but ultimately the show is really just, I think, darkly dramatic. And where it ends and the fate certain characters have, definitely not what I would have seen coming per se, but ultimately I think they really kind of nail it with Barry season four. And it's funny because it's a show that's not a fun hang all that much anymore. It's, again, far cry from what it was, but I really admire what it became. So yeah, shout out Barry. Number four for me is The Last of Us on HBO, the dominant blockbuster series at the beginning of the year. This really exceeded expectations. You know, there's a lot of hype and anticipation for The Last of Us as a celebrated video game franchise. And even though HBO's tackling it with Craig Mazin, who did just on Chernobyl, Neil Druckmann from The Game, and Naughty Dog involved, quite the creative team, still a lot of apprehension of how it would pan out. And it turns out that The Last of Us on HBO is incredible. It was so good. And I think where it diverted from the story of the game, or added on, or embellished, or spent more time with, really shone through and shows the strengths that TV can give you when it's adapting something. Thinking of like the episode three, you know, sidestep episode, where we spend a lot of time with Murray Bartlett and Nick Offerman, you know, and how that's juxtaposed against Anna Torv's character and Joel. You know, I think of the Left Behind DLC interlude episode featuring Storm Reid. You know, those moments really, I think, elevated the show overall to me, which at its core was incredibly excellent with its two central performances as from Pedro Pascal and Bella Ramsey. And the fact that The Last of Us as a story is able to rise above its familiar but effective trappings, which is post-apocalyptic story, some kind of zombie threat out there, society's broken down, you gotta survive. We get all that, we've seen that before. But The Last of Us does all that stuff really well, but it's concerned about character. And that is, and like, again, those side episodes really embellish character and enhance your leads. But ultimately, like, the journey you go on with Joel and Ellie, all the people they encounter, it's just really remarkably done. Production values are out of this world. Really grueling long shoot. That's why we're not getting season two until 2025. And that was the case even before the strikes. You know, it looks like $1 million. And also, you just have so much room for all these cameo and side roles because it's such a rich, you know, story. So you have small roles for Anna Torv and Melanie Lynskey, and I mentioned some of the others already, like Offerman and Bartlett and Reed. Like, it's just kind of loaded as a series. You have all the voice casts from the games, like Troy Baker and Laura Bailey showing up as well. like, there's just so much to chew on with the series. And I think it really has a dynamite finale, leaves you in a great place in terms of Ellie having suspicions about Joel leading into the second season. Yeah, I mean, they really nailed it. And it's, I think, kind of undeniably like the best video game adaptation we've ever got on screen. You know, we always talk about failed video game movies, but this year we got Mario, which for what it was pretty effective, and The Last of Us, which was incredibly dramatically fulfilling as well, and was nominated for many Emmys as a result. So, yeah, shout out The Last of Us, man. I mean, this was kind of dominant in the TV conversation for that first quarter of the year, and for good reason. Number three for me is Beef, the miniseries on Netflix starring Ali Wong and Steven Yeun. This is a show that really exceeded expectations. Kind of came out of nowhere for me. I wasn't quite as knowledgeable of the series itself, but of course, big fan of Steven Yeun's work the past few years. He's been crushing as a dramatic actor, and an opportunity for Ali Wong to really spread her wings dramatically. And yeah, this really exceeded expectations for a lot of reasons. I think for one, really good central premise for starters, which is just a road rage incident between two people in LA. But where the show goes from there, it's just not what you expect. It's not a predictable show. And the priorities the show has with its narratives, with its character development, is just so much more advanced and interesting than what the more traditional predictable path would have been. And it's the show that also has that ambition, but is able to nail it and land it at the end. I mean, shit, you have like a Lynchian-esque finale, like dream fugue state at the end. Didn't see that part coming, you know? Ali Wong really shines with dramatic material on this. She shares a lot of credit for me. You know, Steven Yeun's character, Danny, his brother character, played by Young Mazzino, really big breakout for me, really great. Small role from Ashley Park. I thought she was wonderful. Yeah, I mean, like, the whole cast is great, but just the fact that, like, the Beef narrative is able to take all these twists and turns, but it's not, like, hokey or contrived at any moment. Everything feels genuine, and as a result, it's able to really have you switch your allegiances of which character you're rooting for, which character you're spending time with, and Beef as a series challenges you in terms of who you're rooting for, and in terms of what you're thinking about these people. I think it's a really rewarding series, and yeah, I mean, I think it's really kind of one of a kind, and I'm hoping it runs away with the limited series Emmy nominations that it got. I hope it gets those wins, because I think it's really deserved and really kind of rises above a lot of other limited series. You know, this is really just a really original thing that I think really executed quite well. So yeah, shout out Beef, number three for me. Now we're at the big two. I think these were kind of unquestionably the two best shows of the year. And number two for me would be The Bear on FX, on Hulu, The Bear Season 2, The Bear Season 1, the surprise of TV of 2022, absolutely came out of nowhere, you know, from Christopher Storer. And we're back with Season 2, we're back with the gang, and I think this is a series that, you know, continues to reward you for what it prioritizes. It's a show about character, specifically about kind of loss and motivation and self-worth, and I think it really elevated itself with Season 2. It's a huge step up from a show that already was executing at such a high level, and the economy of screenwriting that you get from this series, that how much it's able to communicate in half-hour episodes is really mind-blowing to me. Obviously, you have this standout cast, Jeremy Allen White, Ayo Edebiri. They're both fantastic, amazing on this show. They're really hold this screen, really live in these characters. And then, of course, really nice supporting bench as well from people like Lionel Boyce, of course, Evan Moss Baccarat as Richie, tremendous. This year, we had a nice addition from Molly Gordon as his love interest for Carmi. And I think what helped really set up The Bear Season 2 was a handful of like kind of like side episodes where you spend time with these characters. The first of which, I believe it's the first one, is when we go with Lionel Boyce's character, the dessert chef. We go with him to, is it Amsterdam? Is it, we go with him to Europe to study. And who does he study from? None other than a chef played by Will Poulter. And the conversations they have together in terms of doing what you love and motivating yourself, just amazing writing, you know? You get the infamous, famous episode 6, I believe it is, Fishes, which is a flashback 1-hour long episode where we spend time with Carmi's whole family for, I believe, Christmas. Christmas. And as a result, we spend time with John Bernthal's older brother character while he's still alive. A bunch of other high-profile cameos. Jamie Lee Curtis plays the mom. You got John Mulaney, Sarah Paulson, Bob Odenkirk is the uncle. And it's an insight into how Carmi is fucked up the way he is. And another great and really helps you highlight and like spend just more time with this guy's psyche and how he's unable to really compartmentalize his life. And obviously that really manifests in the finale where he's unable to combine his dedication to be great for the bear, the restaurant, with his genuine desire to have a relationship with this, reconnection with Molly Gordon's character. And yeah, I mean, Fishes is kind of dynamite. The second season in a row, two for two of one episode, guest roles from John Bernthal, where that guy just comes out of the bullpen and just throws a 102 on the black and gets three strikeouts. Like, the guy is absolutely incredible in this role. Dynamite box office. He has such presence, but I think the best episode of the season is arguably what's to come, which is Forks, the episode where Richie goes to like a Michelin star restaurant to kind of train as a maitre d' for a week. And I thought that episode where, Richie's growth through the two seasons culminating in that episode, just really special to me. The Taylor Swift jubilation at the end, which is in and of itself an awesome callback to his bemoaning his daughter for overplaying Taylor two episodes ago. But like that episode, you have Olivia Colman showing up at the very end as the chef of that famous restaurant. Like, man, like, this is a show that I think at times is very stressful, and it's not funny. It's a show that's it's not fun to be with. It's funny at times, nominated in the Comedy Emmy category, but there is just so much, I think, rich character work with this. There's a lot of darkness with some of these characters as well. But it's a show that I think really has a compact yet vast vision. And I think it just really speaks to the craft behind the series. And you have these amazing performances as well. So I'm expecting The Bear to kind of dominate the Comedy Emmys. It's nominated for season one coming up soon. Season two assuredly will be nominated again, and so deserved. This is just a really special series to me that I really value. And I really hope Hulu and FX could release this over the course of a few weeks. This show has so much depth to it. The conversation should be long. Spread it out. There's plenty to chew on with just a few episodes. We don't need to do a full binge with this. Please spread it out a little bit. That'd be awesome. But yeah, The Bear, number two for me. And if you have it at number one, it'd be really hard for me to blame you. But for me, though, it's not my number one. My number one is, of course, Succession. And number one, the best show of 2023, Succession Season 4, the fourth and final season. The third, fourth, and final season on my list. Funny how that worked out. Succession is one of the best shows of all time. It's in the greater television pantheon. To me, it's on the HBO Mount Rushmore as well. Really special. It's been said ad nauseum, but to me, it's hard to overstate just how amazing this series was. And season four was an absolute knockout with a 10 out of 10 finale. And I was so, so happy. And I had a lot of faith in Jesse Armstrong and the writers' room behind Succession that this was going to be the case ultimately. But the kind of trite talking point of who wins Succession was never actually what you should be asking, because that's not what this show was concerned about. And that's where this finale took us. This is a show that at times gave us some incredible darkness. America Decides comes to mind, the episode. And yet, it's also one of the greatest examples of rooting for bad people on TV, right? Spending time with the Roys. All of the Roys suck. We've known that for quite a while. And in fact, none of them win. I think kind of the masterstroke of the development to this point where all of this makes complete sense. And our end result is Roman just not being able to cut it. Kendall wanting it so bad, but just not being good enough and not being reliable. And Shiv, of course, wanting it so bad, but in her own, arrogance, effectively gives the power position to the man she hates, thus requiring her to remain married to this man she loathes so she can remain close to power. And we know how debilitating that relationship is between those two characters. Like, no matter where you look, there's amazing depth, there's amazing character growth, Of course, some moments of the show are so fucking funny. Alexander Skarsgård as Madsen, the Gojo CEO. He does a great job this season. Honestly, some of the best work Skarsgård's ever given us, you know? And, man, I mean, there's just so much to highlight. I spent a lot of time talking about this, the fourth season, just because it's just triumph after triumph, I thought, this season. It's just so riveting every single week. And, well, I mean, all the performances are incredible. You know, I think Matthew McFadden and Jeremy Strong, to me, rise above to the top as, like, the best pure performances. As Tom and Kendall. But these are probably the signature roles for Kieran Culkin and Sarah Snook, you know, as Roman and Schiff. Really tremendous. Ultimately, to me, it's just a union of everything. It's the best written show on TV with the best ensemble, the best acting. It's just kind of the best combination of everything. And, like, the vision, what the show prioritized, the fact that it was able to kind of maintain this tension for weeks on weeks as we watch this show, of course, killing Logan earlier than we expected. Not that we expected Logan to make it through, we didn't, but Connor's wedding happened quite quickly. And yeah, I mean, like, it really exceeded my expectations and somehow subverted them at the same time. Absolute masterpiece. I mean, I don't know what more people need to be convinced about. Like, it's just there's gonna be a void, I think, with Succession gone, you know? And you think about the last 2 years, we've had kind of the dominant series of our time. Last 5 years, they've all ended. Better Call Saul, gone. Succession, gone. Barry, gone. Even shows on different wavelengths, like Marvel's Mrs. Maisel, Sex Education, Atlanta, of course, the greatest comedy of the last 10 years. Like, all these shows just ended in the last 2 calendar years. Pretty impressive. So, we're in uncharted territory for HBO. You know, we're back in the Thrones time with House of the Dragon. No worries about HBO. I know I have complete faith in them. But this, which is a show I was on the train with, on the board from day one, watched it right when it came out. Happy to celebrate it. I mean, it was my best show of 20. Season 3 was my best show of 2021 as well. And now I'm confident saying it's one of the best shows ever. And yeah, shout out Succession. But yeah, that's my top 10. Go through it real quick, then we'll do my honorable mentions. 10, Gen V. 9, Hijack. 8, Sex Education. 7, What We Do in the Shadows. 6, The Righteous Gemstones. 5, Barry. 4, The Last of Us. 3, Beef. 2, The Bear. And 1, Succession. Some honorable mentions. I want to say shout out Black Mirror coming back. Pretty good. Shout out the One Piece adaptation on Netflix. They actually did it. They made a good anime adaptation. Shout out them. And I want to shout out 3 shows that are not done yet. That'll be ending in early January. That I've been liking quite a bit. For All Mankind Season 4, Fargo Season 5, and Monarch Legacy of Monsters on Apple, the Godzilla series. Quite enjoyed all them. In terms of most disappointing, I would say I definitely have a clear number 1, but some other shows I want to acknowledge. Ted Lasso Season 3, absolutely terrible. To me, it was my worst show I saw in 2023. Also disappointing, Secret Invasion from Marvel, need I say more. Winning Time Season 2 on HBO, really kind of a dud, and didn't see that one coming. That one, that hurts. That stings. Light disappointment for me, Mandalorian Season 3. Still enjoyed it, but not quite as good as past Mando seasons. But clearly, the most disappointing show of the year would be The Idol on HBO. I mean, I don't know. Like, how did this show featuring The Weeknd, Jennie of Blackpink, and Troye Sivan, how did only one of those characters make a big impression? Troye Sivan was the best performer on that show somehow. That's not a good thing. Yeah, the Sam Levinson series, which had so much baggage going in, just did not work, ultimately, despite, I think, a big swing, which I appreciate as a big swing, as an original take, and if it prioritized other things, it could have been a lot better. Check my review on The Idol, but ultimately, that's my biggest disappointment. But yeah, I think 2024, it's going to be big. You know, we have some heavy hitters coming back, like House of the Dragon, like Pachinko, Tokyo Vice coming back, Avatar: The Last Airbender adaptation, True Detective returns, Lulu Wang's Expats, FX's Shogun looks incredible, Apple has Masters of the Air, can't wait for that, Donald Glover's back with Mr. and Mrs. Smith, Netflix has given us Three Body Problem adaptation, Amazon's giving us the Fall adaptation. We got a lot of stuff in the first 4 months of the year, and I can't wait. TV's going to be roaring pretty soon, which is quite surprising given the strikes. So maybe that will stop the second half of the year, but I'm feeling good about the first half. But yeah, let me know. What were your top 10 shows of 2023? What's a show I overlooked? I want to say shout out I'm a Virgo on Amazon Prime. That's a show that I really wanted to watch from Boots Riley. Just didn't get to. That's probably my biggest miss of the year. But yeah, let me know. What are your thoughts? What are your favorite shows of the year? And for more TV reviews, subscribe. And I'll see you next time.